Damn him. Cherries. As a little kid once, when I stayed the night, I snuck an unopened box of holiday chocolate-covered cherry cordials into my room and ate the entire thing. Then I rolled around my race car bed with a stomachache for the rest of the night. I was 3, but he has not let me live it down. Avery, all innocence, takes a healthy swig and then practically moans with delight. She drinks her entire glass before I've taken a sip. When I get to drinking, I confirm the worst. It's cherry liqueur buried under so much chocolate and cream it's almost unrecognizable. Fucking hell. I have not touched a chocolate-covered cherry in almost 2 decades, which, from the glint in his eyes, Pops probably realizes. Tapping his glass, I shrug. Slange. Slange, he says cheerfully with a wicked smirk. I turn half away and down it quickly with no ill effects. My stomach's been ironclad since puberty. A chocolate cocktail is not going to come back up, no matter how nauseatingly sweet it is. When I'm done, I put the empty glass in the sink, signaling that one's my limit. That's a concoction my new girl made me special, she did. There's a teasing note in his voice, the Irish accent kicking up a notch. I told her me lad has a bit of a sweet tooth for chocolate cherries. For fuck's sake, I murmur. But I laugh in spite of myself. And what new girl? The very one? He says with mock reverence. Finally managed to get her on the line, so I could reel her in. I've been after a date for ages. She's a younger woman, don't you know? No, I definitely don't know. I think grimly, how young? 52? He says with a shrug of his brows. Cradle robber, I deadpan. This brings on a riot of laughter from both him and Avery. Then I notice he's poured her another drink, and she's finished most of it. Avery, I say, circling the counter. With a quick gulp, the last of it's gone, and she's licking her lips. Yes? You know that's got liquor in it. Her head jerks down at the glass like I've said it was full of hemlock. Oh, just a touch, my grandfather says dismissively. He's full Irish and, even at 70, couldn't be brought low by a whole bottle of Bushmills, let alone a cherry cordial. In this case, his opinion doesn't factor. And sure enough, Avery looks warily into her empty glass. I don't really drink. Pouty lips purse, and her head tilts. It was delicious, though. She takes her glass to the sink and sets it there as a companion to mine. No worries. The food'll be ready soon. The old man peeks in the oven. The smell of bubbling gravy escapes, making my stomach growl. Pops pours himself another whiskey and regales Avery with tales of my boyhood shenanigans. Low chuckles from her sound like purring, which sends my mind in the direction of sex. A glance at the oven reminds me we're here to eat. Is the shepherd's pie another thing from the girlfriend? Yes, Pops grins. She claims she's no grand cook, but I call it false modesty. She's dead brilliant at shepherd's pie and potato hash and every other thing she's made me. Pretty, gorgeous. Since the day she was born, I expect. I've known her going on 20 years or more, and she's always been. Surprised you found her single, I say. Well, she's widowed, you know. Wasn't very keen on taking up with anyone. And she has a notorious son, which keeps some away. I like the lad. Do I know him? You'll know of him, I expect. Name's Scott Patrick. Goes by Trick. Christ. Trick Patrick's notorious, all right. Before I can comment on that bit of news, my attention shifts to Avery, who sways as she takes a step. Whoa. She mumbles. Avery's hair falls over her shoulder when she looks back at me. I didn't eat lunch. That spiked cocoa's hitting me, I think. The tip of her tongue traces her lips, as if checking their general disposition. My guess is they're tingling from her buzz. When she turns, she teeters slightly. My shoes are tall. And they've grown a couple inches in the past hour, I say with a sympathetic smirk. Perfect white teeth nibble her lower lip. It is dead fucking sexy. Then a delicate hand reaches out for me, like I'm exactly what she needs. and that's an entreaty that will never fail to land. Without even thinking, I step forward so she can grab on. Her hand slides up, past my elbow to my bicep. Her fingers are cool, but the touch is anything but. "You're strong," she whispers. "It's a good thing." She has me. 100%. "How's it going, Ave?" I whisper back. A breath escapes like a whistle through puckered lips. "I don't know. I feel very strange." She wobbles, and my hands shoot forward to catch her. I lift her, setting her on the island's countertop so I can pull off her slinky heels. "Easy there, Cinderella. I think I'd better eat soon." "Agreed," I say with a wink. "I'm sorry. I shouldn't have had a second glass. I never drink." Her worried look hits home. Drinking alcohol scares her. Has she not been drunk since that time 2 years ago? "Hey." My voice is as soft and reassuring as I can make it. "You all right, Ave? I've got you."
"Yeah, I'm all right."
Her head bobs a nod, but it's as if she's trying to convince herself. Avery crosses one leg over the other, and the panels of the dress separate enough to give me a view up her thighs, almost to the promised land. The alcohol has hit her hard, which speaks to her lack of drinking experience. I don't even have a buzz. Her head tilts, noting the direction of my gaze on her bare thighs.
"I should get down."
She tries to keep her skirt from riding up as she inches toward the counter's edge. "Here, baby." I pluck her off the counter and carry her to the kitchen table. Setting her in a chair, I say, "Just relax. Food's coming." On the island, her abandoned phone chooses that moment to buzz. She starts to rise, but I put a hand on her shoulder. "Nah, I'll get it for you." I walk over to retrieve the device and am treated to a grin from my grandfather. I roll my eyes at his amusement. The old man's been waiting for me to get serious with someone. He might think that's what I'm finally doing, but this thing with Avery is complicated and unlikely to last. When Avery opens the message, she exhales an annoyed sigh. "They are so ridiculous." I glance down and see Declan's name in the thread. Leaning over, I see it's a message from Sherry. "What's that about?" I ask. She wrinkles her nose. "And it's cute as fucking hell."
"Nothing.
Seems like something," I counter. "Spill."
"A ridiculous matchmaking scheme."
That's a complete sucker punch. When I speak, my voice is a low growl. "What?" She shrugs.
"My mom and Declan's think because we have similar dark hair and blue eyes, we'd make a cute couple. Black Irish all around, I guess."
She mumbles vaguely. Her head tips forward so her wavy hair falls around her face. "What the fuck?" First of all, Declan's not Irish. He's a fucking Mayflower blue blood. But more importantly, since when is matchmaking Deck with Avery a thing her mom and Deck's stepmother engage in? When did they say that, Avery? When we were in high school?
Yeah.
She tilts her head to the side, and the black velvet strands fall away from her stunning face.
And on and off since. We're supposed to ski with them, or something. Winter break.
Jealousy grabs me by the throat, unleashing a tidal wave of testosterone and adrenaline. My heart thumps like a gorilla stomping through the jungle. My dad invited me for a ski trip over winter break, which I immediately nixed as a possibility. A family trip for the four of us? Hard pass. But Ethan never said anything about the Hayworths being part of the trip. Declan didn't mention it either. Is Deck trying to keep details of the trip from me? He should know better. An instant later, I reconsider. Declan's a brother to me. A girl has never come between us. And if one did, it certainly wouldn't be Avery Kershaw. Deck distrusts her even more than I did. He's the one who floated the theory that she knew all along we hadn't had sex, but stayed quiet so the focus wouldn't be on her night of wild, underage drinking. Declan suspects most women of cunning, ulterior motives. Over the years, there's been an endless parade of gold diggers after the Hayworth family fortune.
Deck says he was about 5 years old when his grandfather began impressing upon him the importance of a prenuptial agreement. It's like they never met Declan. Avery holds up her palms in a what-the-hell gesture. He doesn't see me that way. He actively dislikes me, although the other night he did make sure I got home safe. I guess that time we were cool. I'm speechless. I'm the one who sent Declan to walk her back to her dorm, which she knows. What she doesn't know is that I had to talk him into it. In the end, he only did it to keep me from having to get near her. The memory helps cool my blood a bit. I hate the idea of Deck with Avery, but not because it's Declan. I've never been able to stand the thought of anyone other than me touching her. She's re all over? My grandfather warns in a whisper, like a devil on my shoulder. Ethan never knew how to handle your mother, and she slipped right through his fingers. Avery rubs her eyes, smudging the smokiness under her lids, oblivious to our side conversation. She shakes her head as if she's trying to clear it. If I spend another second imagining her with Declan, I may put my fist through the wall. Time for a change of subject. You need to eat something, Avery. Pops opens the oven and removes the pie. The crusted potato peaks are golden and perfect. Yes, I do need to eat. Avery's fingertips press against her lips as if to lock her words away. Can I just be alone a few minutes? I need that, too. Sure, I say, studying her as she tries to sit primly. When the steaming food is plated, I deliver it to her. It's hot, I warn. Give it a second. Once she's settled and focused on her food and her phone, I return to the counter island where I can have a quiet word with my grandfather. He stands there, shrewdly assessing me. In a very low voice, he says, "She's after talking about your friend Declan, is she?" My nod is curt. This isn't a conversation we need to have. The heir to billions? Pop shrugs his gray brows. That would suit the new wife, I'd imagine. And Ethan, too. No problem with those family ties. Whatever. Declan's family has plenty of skeletons. His are just the high society variety. Pops pulls out a bar stool and sits at the island, then takes a bite of the pie and smiles down at it. She's a rare talent, my lovely widow is. His sharp gaze cuts to the table where Avery's temple is propped against her palm. Now that one. You said whatever. Why's that? You're planning to stand by and watch her go? Like father, like son? Avery and I are not married. We're not even a thing. I brought her here because I'm doing her a favor. Since when is it a favor to bring a girl here? His green eyes bore into me, revealing the same eyes and the same knowing expression I face in the mirror every day. Someone's stalking her. She's scared. A dark expression passes over his face as he leans forward. What will you do about it? When I find him, you can imagine what I'll do. He leans back and licks his fork, then nods, looking satisfied. So this is an opportunity with her. Your strength and her gratitude is a good combination. I nod. Pops washes down the shepherd's pie with milk. He raises the cotton in offering, but I shake my head. He pours a second glass and nods in Avery's direction. I take it and set it on the table near her plate. When I return to him, he asks in a low voice, "Why aren't you and she a thing already? What do you think is wrong with her?" "She's got a problem, mother, for one. Because the woman took one look at you and thought that, given the chance, you'd eat her pretty little daughter alive. I call that smart." He taps a finger on the counter. "Little Sherry outplayed you. She got her hooks into Ethan, and he did not have the stones to back her down when she wanted him to betray you. Don't blame her for that." My grandfather heard the police were summoned to our house. I had no choice but to share some details with him, and at the time, his anger was nearly a match for my own. As someone who always spots an opportunity, he used it as a lever to get into my life in a way he'd never been before. "Sherry's unhinged," I say coolly. but I don't blame her for the things Ethan does. He lets women get the best of him. He's a killer in the courtroom, but that's it. The old man points at me for emphasis and nods. This one, Avery. I peg her as a good girl. Is she? Seems like it, most of the time. And pretty. Beautiful, I agree. His eyes narrow again before he looks down at his plate. Are you really going to let your friend have her? I never said that. His head's tipped over his dish, but his eyes rise at the tone I use when saying the words. Hard. Resolute. If you let her go alone on some ski trip and she's like this, like champagne that sparkles and bubbles, he'll see it, and he'll want it. You may not get a second chance. In life, timing is everything. She's not going anywhere with Declan, or anyone. No? I'm not my dad at 20, Pops. I'm you. This brings a smile to his face. At the table, Avery gasps. Our heads swivel toward her, and I stalk over to see what's wrong. She tries to cover her phone, but I pull it away from her and stare down at the screen, reading the text exchange. Avery. Why did you say Shane's grandfather is dead? He's not dead. I'm having dinner at his house. He's lovely. I like him a ton. Mom. Where are you? Mom. Ave, where are you? Avery. Boston. At Mr. Sullivan's house in Back Bay. Mom. OMG, how did you get there? Leave right now. Do you need Ethan to pick you up? Avery. No. I'm with Shane. He drove. Mom. We're coming to get you. Avery. Why? Mom. Joe Sullivan is the head of the Irish Mafia.
Chapter 12. Shane. Staying overnight in Back Bay wasn't the plan until our parents pulled the trigger on driving over. I figure if I take Avery back to Granthorpe, they'll show up there and discover she's living with me, which will lead to even more drama. Yesterday, someone trying to get her to leave my house would have been fine. Tonight? It's not. I put Avery in a guest room, claiming to be too buzzed to drive. She tries to ask questions about Pops, but I shut that down, saying we should talk about it in the morning. I also convince her that it'll be better for everyone if Ethan and Sherry don't find out she's been drinking. Avery agrees and lies on the bed on top of the covers. She's out in about 5 minutes. Pops heads to the media room to watch sports recaps, leaving me to deal with Ethan and Sherry. That suits me fine. The less people involved, the better. I'm back in the kitchen by the time my phone rings with the third call from my dad. This time, I pick up. You home? Or nearly in Back Bay? I ask calmly. What's going on, Shane? He's calm too, but his tone is grim. He's not using his lawyer voice. This is his disapproving dad voice, one he hasn't tried to use on me in a long time. My fingers drum a staccato beat on the island's marble top. Nothing's going on. I came to Back Bay for dinner.
With Avery. Since when do you hang out with her?
When I tried to get you to have dinner with us when we brought her to Granthorpe, you flat out refused. Our talking is recent. Sherry pipes in with high-pitched agitation that grates on me. And the first thing you do is tell her your Sullivan grandfather is alive and take her to meet him? Why would you do that? It came up. Because you brought it up, Sherry snaps. My muscles contract hard enough to tear from the bone. I never tolerate it well when someone gets sharp with me, and from her, I'll tolerate zero abuse. Pulling the phone from my ear, I decide I'm done. My finger is a millimeter from the screen when my dad interjects, and I pause.
Cher, calm down, he says. Shane, why did Avery reach out to you? Is something going on with her?
I want to handle most of the drama before they get to the house, so I raise the phone again. Casanova being on campus is the thing that's going on with every girl right now.
Is that why she texted you?
She's scared, Ethan asks. They're all scared, and yeah, that's the reason. She can come home right now, Sherry says. The school said there will be no consequences for finishing the semester online. Let me talk to her. Avery crashed.
She's in a guest room, sound asleep. We'll wake her when we get there, Sherry says primly. Not sure who you think you're talking to right now, I say in a low voice. If you come with that attitude, you won't get past the gate. Ethan, Sherry says. It's all right, honey. The placating tone he uses with her shifts to a neutral, lawyer-mediator one when he addresses me again. Shane, listen. I'm happy you're talking to your sister, I roll my eyes. He's been floating that description of Avery for the past 3 years. It's never taken, and it's never going to. No need to say so, though, especially with the wicked stepmother on the line poised to get shrill. I catch my feet pacing a hole in the floor and stop next to a countertop. Let's not turn this into something negative, my dad continues, trying like hell to be the peacekeeper. It's a good thing. You're the one storming the gates in a panic. Seems like old times. I say she's all right, but you won't take my word for it. There's a prolonged silence. He knows better than to come at me hard after I've tossed that down on the field of battle. You know, this is complicated, he says gently and then sighs. None of us wants to tread too deeply into the past. Why take her there, of all places? I brought her because she was with me. I come to Back Bay almost every week. I can predict how that will land. And as expected, there's a stunned silence on their end. Keeping my visits here on the down low was very much the standard from the time I was about 14 years old. I'd ride my bike to the park, and one of my grandfather's guys would show up. They'd throw my bike in the back of a truck and deliver me to wherever he was. When I turned 16, it got easier to see him because I could drive myself. When it comes to my relationship with my dad and grandfather, the tables have definitely turned. I've been to my dad's house once in the past year, at Christmas. The couple of other times I've seen him have been when he's come to Grand Thorpe alone and we had dinner out. That was before he sent Avery to GU and caused me to reinstate the Cold War where I don't see him at all. I'm sure hearing that I'm making weekly trips to Back Bay is tough for him. What if we don't come by tonight? He says finally. Would you consider meeting us for lunch tomorrow, or letting us take you both out to dinner? It would be great to have the four of us together. I wait for Sherry to erupt, but for once, she's quiet. We gotta be on campus tomorrow. Avery's got a class that's important to her. Maybe we'll come your way on the weekend. A beat passes. One of us will let you know. That'll be fine, Dad says. I'm about to end the call when he adds, Shane, thank you for seeing Avery and for looking after her. Hearing the news about what's happening on campus has us worried about her being there alone. I know if she's with you, she's safe. There's a sarcastic reply on the tip of my tongue, but I swallow it. I remind myself I'm putting the basement incident behind me for Avery's sake. That means I have to put it behind all four of us because Avery loves her mom and Ethan. It's too bad her mom's been alerted to the fact that Avery and I are associating with each other again. I'd love to keep Avery just to myself for a while, but I know that won't play. And if there was a real tug-of-war over Avery right now, I'd lose. So there can be no ultimatums, no forced choices between me and them. I need to play nice. At least until I'm sure I'll win.
Avery. I wake and roll from the strange bed. I'm still wearing my blue dress and adjust it so my bra's not showing before I creep out into the hall to find a bathroom. An open door nearby reveals an elegant powder room in cream and gold. A look in the ornately framed mirror reveals my makeup's badly smeared. Good grief. My face belongs on the cover of a horror comic. I use the restroom and then wash my hands and face. My buzz is gone, thankfully. I'm embarrassed that I got intoxicated in front of Mr. Sullivan. Mr. Sullivan. Is Shane's grandfather really the head of an Irish mafia organization? He doesn't seem like he would be. He's so charming. I felt an immediate connection with him. Maybe that's because his brand of charm reminds me of Shane's from the old days. They're both good storytellers. Last night, Shane picked me up and called me baby. A wave of heat courses through me at the memory. I hug my arms to my sides. The vibe reminded me of the way he was when I first moved into Ethan's. Though, of course, he never touched me or called me baby back then. The sexual current between us is new. Just thinking about it causes prickles of desire between my legs. I shake my head at the way my attraction to him threatens to rage out of control over something so small, dangerous, on so many levels. I finger comb the tangles from my hair and then sneak back to the guest room. It's toasty warm, so I push the thick comforter back to climb in bed. Which is when I realize I'm not alone. Shane? I sit on the edge of the bed, and using a fingertip, I press his bare-muscled shoulder. Is he completely naked? I don't reach down to find out. Having him pull out his cock while I'm on my knees to service him is different than touching him while he's in bed asleep. The latter's definitely more intimate. Another round of desire curls through my lower belly and into my core. Jesus. I squeeze his shoulder gently, marveling at how great it feels. His whole body is ripped. He may not be playing football anymore, but he's clearly not missing workouts. Shane stirs and rolls toward me. When he takes a deep breath, his chest expands. He is beautiful. Hey, he murmurs, his voice gravelly with sleep. You sober? My nose scrunches as I cringe. Yes, sorry about earlier. Nothing to be sorry about. Not like you danced naked on a table. He stretches and smiles. You're cute as hell drunk. Somehow, I doubt that. A small frown threatens. I bet your grandfather didn't think my getting drunk was cute. Sure he did. The old man thinks everything about you is cute. He's pulling hard for me to keep you. So he can see your pretty face again. A small smile tugs at my mouth. It's nice that Mr. Sullivan likes me. Of course, there's no possibility of Shane keeping me, since this isn't a relationship. And if Shane's grandfather understood the bargain I struck with Shane, I'm sure his impression of me would change drastically. Hot in here. Shane shoves the covers down, exposing washboard abs and black boxer briefs. He pushes up on his elbow and looks me over. Then grabs the tie around my wrap dress and tugs. The loop disappears, and the tie slackens. My hand darts up to cover myself. What are you doing? Unwrapping you. He pushes the fabric, which slides over so my silky blue bra's exposed. Fortunately, the dress's internal tie keeps it from opening completely. Shane pulls at the dress, making the fabric stretch and strain. Shane, no, you'll rip it. Take it off. No, I whisper, bending forward so my face is closer to his groin. He grabs my shoulders and lifts my mouth away from his cock. Let's make it mutual tonight. Get up and take off your dress. A halting breath is trapped in my throat. I want to listen to him, but no, I shouldn't. Shaking my head, I whisper, it's not a good idea. I mean for my voice to be firm, but the end of the sentence rises like I'm asking a question. Shane arches a brow, and the corners of his mouth curve. Do you need me to make you, princess? Because I can. That sends a ripple of lust through me, my nipples tightening to points that strain against the fabric. He's right. I do like him as a monster. His expression darkens. But first, I'll spank you. My breath catches. You cannot do that, not here. I can't, he muses. Then his body moves with panther-like speed, shifting both of us to the edge of the bed and dragging me over his lap. Wait, he does not wait. His leg scissors over mine, trapping my thighs between his. His hand drags the dress upward until it's at my waist. And then his fingers toy with my panties. If you're a good girl and stay very quiet, I'll let you keep these on. I press my lips together between my teeth, my muscles rigid and my core clenching with excitement. He could be teasing me, trying to get me to beg him to let me up so I'll undress as the lesser of two evils. Even though I know it's coming, when his hand comes down on my ass, I freeze. It's a slap and doesn't cause more than a sting, but it's still shocking. Then his heavy palm comes down over and over with successively more force. It's gradual, so I don't realize how hard it's become until I'm gasping for breath. Oh my God. The moment's so darkly sexual, my mind almost can't believe it's happening. He pauses, rubbing me slowly, squeezing my warm ass. Are you ready to behave? What? My voice is so breathy, it's barely audible. I asked you to do something. Are you ready to obey? Obey. Shivers of fear and lust cascade through me at his use of that word. Let me go, I whisper, as my body starts to tremble. That's not the right answer, baby. His fingers graze my spine, sending a riot of lust and new shivers through me. But the way you squirm and squeeze your thighs together is. The spanking continues until heat blossoms through my ass and between my legs. My core aches from something other than pain, and the burning in my backside intensifies. Tears sting my eyes, and my lip throbs from where I'm biting it. My feet kick, and I try to twist free. It doesn't work. He pins my arm against my back until I'm helpless and can't move without hurting myself. Once he has complete control of my body, he punishes me some more. Okay, please, Shane, okay, I hiss. Strong fingers squeeze my ass and dip between my legs to stroke the damp panel of my underwear. I gasp, my face flaming. His grip eases enough for me to slide from his lap onto the floor. But as I try to crawl away, Shane leans forward and grabs a handful of my hair, making me gasp anew. He doesn't pull. But his hold makes it impossible for me to move another inch without having my head pulled back. Trapped again. Stand up, he commands in a firm tone that brooks no defiance. Right in front of me. He releases his hold on my hair so I can obey. I lurch to my feet but hesitate to move. Do I run for the door or shuffle the few inches to stand in front of him? I tell myself that if I run, he'll catch me. But that's just an excuse to do what I really want to do. When I'm standing before him, he puts his hands on the backs of my thighs and slides them up to cup my ass. You all right? My face flames. No, of course not. His grip tightens on my warm flesh, causing my core to clench. My body's a sexual instrument, and he's the virtuoso who's taken it in hand. Are you sure? His intense gaze leaves me feeling naked. The way you move. A part of you seems to enjoy having your pretty ass spanked. I glance down at his strong thighs, where I was just lying, and the waves of lust crash over me again. My hair falls around my face, shielding me from his scrutiny. I think you're saying that because you liked doing it, I counter in a whisper. Looking tentatively through my lashes at him, I'm breathless. A slow smile curves his mouth. He's totally unabashed. I did enjoy it, he says in that sexy voice. I like when you're sweet and smile at me. But I'll like it just as much when you're not. If that means I get to punish you in ways that make you wet for me. You are wet, right? I don't answer. We both know I am. He moves one of his hands so it's against my panties. Then a finger snakes under the fabric to touch me. All the blood seems to pool below my waist, making me lightheaded. Drawing the finger out, He brings it to his mouth and sucks on it. His eyes close for a moment and he exhales a heavy breath. I need more of that. Opening his eyes, he tilts his head, appraising me. I won't force you, even though I really want to. He whispers in a husky voice. Tell me what you want. Should I act sweet? I can do that for you. He takes my hand and slides it over his pecs, bringing it to rest over his heart. If you want things to stop for the night, say so. His left hand is still cupping my ass, and he squeezes harder, resurrecting the soreness and the sexiness of having my ass spanked. If you're quiet, Avery, I'll keep going. The anticipation is excruciating. When I finally speak, my voice is as soft as feathers. I'll undress if you promise we'll only use our mouths on each other. Shane stands, and our bodies touch, causing electricity to spark between us as he towers over me. His eyes are dark and knowing. I don't have a condom here, so I promise not to put my cock inside you, where it belongs. His fingers grip my hair and pull my head back. He kisses my neck and then whispers in my ear, otherwise no promises. I'm going to get you off, and that will involve my fingers stroking your clit until you're begging to come. I shudder at the raw way he talks to me. Now get undressed. More and more darkness enters his tone. Unless you want me to do it for you. When I don't move, he reaches inside the dress where it's tethered and jerks the inner tie. My eyes widen as the fabric separates, framing my body. My hands catch his upper arms, squeezing his hard biceps. If you're too rough, I won't enjoy it. A sinister smile resurfaces. I'll be just rough enough, and you will enjoy it. He shoves the dress off my shoulders and grabs my hips, pulling me against him. His erection strains to free itself. His fingers play with my hair. Then his thumbs hook the lace at my waist and slide my panties down to my thighs as he lowers himself to his knees. His exhalation of breath is a sigh against my hot flesh. Beautiful. Leaning forward, he slides the tip of his tongue into my belly button. It's a small penetration, but a meaningful one. Then he grips my hips and slides his mouth lower to between my lower lips. He licks me there. My whole body vibrates with pleasure and anticipation. A shuddering breath escapes, and my shaky fingers clutch his shoulders. He stands, towering over me again. Lie on the bed and spread your legs. I shimmy until my underwear drops to the floor. Stepping out of them, I resist the urge to cover myself. As I lie on my back on the bed, I'm more nervous than I've ever been. Easing my knees apart, I try to relax. Shane's still wearing his boxer briefs, and the hard line of his erection is obvious and makes my mouth water to taste it again. He joins me on the bed and positions himself so he's kneeling on the mattress between my legs. Then he drops forward onto his palms, lowering his mouth to within an inch of mine. You'd better kiss me now, in case you don't want to later. My body shudders again. I can't seem to control my involuntary reactions to him. I press my palm over his lips. Don't make me kiss you. That's the kind of thing I could hold against you if things go sideways. He turns his head a fraction, freeing his mouth. So I'm only allowed to kiss the dirty places? He asks with a wicked smirk. For someone who's nervous, you sure do like to taunt the beast. He stares down into my eyes, then bites my skin, gently at first, and then as a little threat. He's dangerous. The kind of dangerous that seduces. I'm vaguely aware that I want him to make me kiss him. And then to make me regret it. Instead, he moves slower, kissing my breast where it swells out of the bra's cup. He slides his tongue under the fabric to lick me. It's sexy and slightly sinister, like a serpent slithering through a garden. He works his way down my body, not kissing me again until he's just above my hips. In the hollow of my belly, he tongues my belly button and kisses me once, just below it. Earlier, you asked if I knew about your crush, but you didn't ask if I had one too. The answer is no. I stiffen, resisting as he pushes my legs farther apart, opening me. The vulnerability is almost too much to bear. What I had for you was lust, the raging kind, that made me want to pin you to my bed and fuck you hard, then turn you over and start again. He says it slowly, like he wants the words to sink in and saturate every inch of me. It's a wicked confession that shocks me and makes me hotter and wetter for him. Our parents were wrong to make me live in the basement like I lacked self-control. The truth is, controlling myself around you is what I did all day, every day, and through the night. If I hadn't, I would have cornered you in dark places where we'd be alone and uninterrupted. And then I'd have done things like what I'm about to do now. I'd have tasted you in all your innocence until you weren't anymore. Oh my God. He lowers his head and his tongue slides between my lower lips. There's plenty of me to taste because I'm so aroused by this. His hands push my thighs wide apart and pin them to the mattress. Just being opened for him makes my body thrum with lust. My breasts ache and my nipples tingle. I breathe deeply, trying to get enough air. His mouth is open when he kisses between my legs, his tongue stroking and tasting until I raise my hips. My body wants a quick release. I'm desperate for it. When he tries to push his tongue inside me, it meets resistance. The pause is electric. A live wire sparking between us. He looks up the length of my body. I don't make eye contact. His head lowers again, and he licks above my opening, sending shattering sensations through me. He chases the arousal by rubbing his thumb over the bead of my clit. It needs pressure and friction, and Shane knows exactly how to give me both. I groan and hope I wasn't too loud. My breath leaves my lungs in gasps and pants. Writhing under his mouth, I try to keep myself from begging. He's relentless with his sucking and licking until my body's on the very edge of orgasm. Finally, his thumb rubs back and forth over me with so much pressure, I explode. The waves roll over me like 10-foot swells. It's better than it's ever been when I've done it to myself. My heart leaps in my chest as the ripples continue through me, making my core clench and release over and over. The spiral of pleasure eases slowly, and I melt back into the mattress. Shane crawls up my body and stares down into my eyes, searing my mind with his intensity. You're too tight for me to tongue fuck. I turn my head to look away. Virgin is a word I don't want to say. I decide instantly I won't admit it unless he forces me to. For me, still being a virgin is synonymous with my pariah status in high school, which persisted even after Shane and Declan were long gone. He lowers his body onto mine. So we're skin to skin, and his hard on presses between my legs. He shifts so it's resting right in the seam, cradled there by my soft lower lips that are wet and sticky from his mouth and from how much I want him. Still a virgin. He grinds against me, making my traitorous hips circle. It's mine to take, he husks. From now on, don't even look at another guy. No one touches you between your legs, Avery. Not even you.
Chapter 13. Shane.
I wake at 7 in the morning, and my first thought is I want to take Avery's virginity. Finding I'm alone in the bed is probably a good thing, because this is not the place I should do it. I get up and throw my clothes on, hitting the bathroom before I head downstairs to find her. In the kitchen, Pops sits at the table as Avery pours him coffee. Her face is washed, hair combed, pretty, pristine, perfect. She's back in the blue dress, of course, but her heels are still in the corner where I tossed them. Pops and Avery seem cozy as they have coffee. She's smiling and polite, but the abandon she had while laughing last night is gone. I wonder if he notices. Probably does. Pops doesn't miss much. When she sees me, she smiles, and that hits me in a way I don't expect. For an instant, I'm struck again by the magnetic pull between us. No matter the history, our chemistry does not die. In response to the smile, I wink, try not to give away the thoughts circling my head. I pour myself coffee just to give myself something to do until I can get my shit together. She continues talking to Pops about some class she's got. He's acting like he's a dinosaur when it comes to tech stuff, which he isn't. This is his way of drawing her in. He asks her questions and acts impressed. In return, she's charming. It's a dance. In reality, he's got people to do all the business things that need to get done, including the tech side of things. She seems to be under the impression that his billion-dollar empire is being run from the docks and the backs of warehouses. A fraction definitely is, but any kind of business, even an illegitimate one, is high-tech or it wouldn't survive a week these days. She talks about creating the optimal customer experience through a cascade of automated emails. The person gets different ones depending on what he clicks, she says. It's choose-your-own-adventure in email form. That's quite a thing it is, Pop says admiringly. I smirk down into my mug, thinking about Pops sending out a canned selection of emails, or any emails at all. What might they say? Last week, we broke a guy's hand for skimming. Click here if you want to read the terms of service for our enterprise and how theft will cost you more in the long run. Click the second button below to update your health insurance in case there's an emergency surgery in your future. I chuckle, and when I turn, they're both giving me a questioning look. I shake my head. Nothing. Pops leans toward Avery and says, I'd like to know more about newsletter businesses. My eyebrows rise at this. She smiles. Ever the teacher's pet. I'd be happy to forward you some things I designed for my e-commerce class. They're not as sophisticated as what giant companies have, but it would give you a feel. Hey, I say, inclining my head at the window. We've got to table this for now. If we're going to make it back to school in time, we need to hit the road. Right, she says, standing. Mr. Sullivan, thank you again. I had a really great time. And I'll send the emails to Shane so he can forward them to you. Pop stands as well. No need. Shane'll bring you when he comes for dinner next week, and you'll show me yourself. Oh, yes, maybe, she murmurs vaguely, putting on her shoes. I chug a few more swallows from my mug and dump the rest into the sink. Avery does the same and washes both mugs quickly and puts them in the drying rack. Pops watches her with a smile and winks at me. He has very definite ideas of the way men and women should take care of each other, so of course he approves. He'd also approve of the fact that she's still a virgin at 18, but that's a fact he's never going to know. No one is. That's between her and me. We all walk to the front door, and I shake his hand. She gives him a brief hug and then slips out as soon as the doors open. Outside, our bodies brush against each other as I open the passenger door for her. Her cheeks are flushed from the cold, and possibly more. Last night, when I discovered she's a virgin, it was like stumbling across buried treasure. Rare. Unexpected. Hidden and secret. I wanted to know why she's got such little experience, but Avery was hesitant to talk about it. Instead, she gave me a blowjob to reciprocate for the orgasm I gave her. and then we both crashed. Today, her persistent innocence is the only topic of conversation that interests me. I love everything about the fact that I've got a second chance at being what I always wanted to be, Avery's first. The one who teaches her about sex. The one who makes her come for the first time when a cock's inside her. I want her to learn how good sex can feel, and for the sex between us to be the best she ever has. Where Avery's concerned, I basically want to be all things. First, best, and, if I'm being completely honest about my fantasies from back then, the only one ever. As I pull out of the drive, I say, "You didn't answer me last night," when I said, she cuts me off in a tone that's low but accusatory. "Are you working for him, Shane?" The sweet girl from the kitchen is suddenly nowhere to be seen. This version of Avery is clear-eyed and sharp. "Is that why you need a locked room in your house?" Her tone leaves a lot to be desired, considering she's asking questions I've already said aren't open for discussion. "My business is none of yours, remember?" She stiffens and turns her head to stare out the passenger window. "Now you're upset?"
"No."
Her voice is cool and very clearly upset. "As you said, it's none of my business. Thanks for reminding me." I blow out a breath as I enter the expressway. What's between you and me is, I'm about to say new when she cuts me off again. "There's nothing between us." She continues to look at the road instead of me, which I don't like. "Last night was fun." "Fun." My lip curls in distaste. I don't like the pattern that's emerging. My fingers tighten on the steering wheel when what they'd really like would be for me to pull over, yank her dress up, and spank her gorgeous ass on the side of the road while cars pass. My cock hardens at the thought of owning her that way. "That's as far as I go. By the way," she adds, not helping me talk myself out of punishing her for real. "No more pushing boundaries." When I reply, my voice is level, even though calm is not what I feel. "What do you mean by that?"
"I mean, let's stick to the agreement. I'll do what I promised, and that's all. No more sexcapades or falling asleep together in the same bed."
This is not the day we're supposed to have after last night. "Why are you still a virgin? You planning to save yourself for marriage?"
"No."
She blows out a breath like she's impatient with the conversation, "but I don't want my first time to be with you." My temper's fuse burns to the end, sparking in a full-blown flame instantly. I manage to keep my voice neutral, but it takes serious effort, and I'll be surprised if my steering wheel's not bent in the process. "Why is that?" Her voice softens when she speaks, like she's a little wistful.
"I want to be in love with whoever it is."
"Love." That's not something I can deliver like flowers or a gold bracelet. I shift into third, glancing over at her. She seems serious, which I find strange. If she's such a Puritan about sex, why did she agree so quickly to barter oral sex for protection? So how does that work? My tone is genuinely curious. If you don't fall in love, you stay a virgin forever, and all your boyfriends have blue balls till they give up and end things with you? She rolls her eyes, but her gaze flickers toward me for a moment, possibly recognizing that her plan to withhold sex until she's in love may interfere with her ability to find it. "I don't know." Her fingers smooth down her dress, which causes me to catch a glimpse of her bare knee. Those legs were spread for me last night. I want them to be again. "Maybe I won't wait till I'm in love," she murmurs. "I haven't been in a serious relationship yet. I guess I'll see how I feel at the time." Avery pushes her hair back over her shoulder and shrugs. "Anyway, it's college, and I'm a normal person with normal feelings. I'm sure I'll be able to find someone to fall in love with." She says this casually, but for me, it's a dark veil descending on my plans. I put her in a box, one she's apparently been in since high school, and now she's trying to climb out of it. In high school, when she was 15, I made it known that touching her would lead to bloody consequences. Then, after the basement incident, When she was frozen out socially at school, she went through some sort of meltdown. She buzzed off her hair and dressed in jeans and black hoodies every day, like a subversive punk singer with a grunge singer wardrobe. High school, not known for its tolerance of anything weird, doubled down on keeping her isolated. I figured after I graduated and wasn't around, she'd go back to normal and start dating. She did grow her hair back, but then she adopted a studious, no-nonsense style that was not exactly begging for male attention. The status quo of her being single continued, which suited me. I may not have wanted her in my life, but I still never wanted to imagine her in another guy's bed. Even so, until last night, I'd assumed she'd been with someone. Now she's pairing the girl-next-door look with her diligent, smart-girl ways. Some guys will miss the point, but plenty of others won't. I think about the old man's warning that she's an irresistible draw. In the sapphire dress, she was for me last night. Breasts threatening to slip out for a peek at the room, overlapping folds of her skirt separating to flash smooth thighs, practically begging for my hand to reach in to stroke her pussy. Yeah. No. If I want her, I need to build new walls around her, and I do fucking want her more than ever. Her phone buzzes, and she looks at a text. What in the world? She murmurs. Her brows pinch together, and her head turns in my general direction. Why are members of the dance team inviting me to a party? Yeah, the platinum party. I need to make an appearance behind the scenes, since I'm supplying the liquor. I could skip the main event, though. Blowing it off would give me more time alone with Avery at my house, which appeals to me way more than any party. On the other hand, I could use it as an opportunity to raise the walls. Right. The party. I force a casual tone. I forgot about that. We're going. After class, I'll take you shopping and buy you a dress. You're not buying me clothes. You're not staying home alone at my place, and the party's got a theme, so unless you've already got a platinum-colored dress, you need one. She frowns, then nibbles on her bottom lip. My mouth really wants a chance to do that. I don't do that kind of dress-up anymore. I'm not sure what she means, but I don't want to get mired down. Tonight, you do, since you're coming with me. Her sapphire gaze slides over to my face. I can stay home alone. Not in my house, you can't. Are you worried I'll break into your secret room? That hadn't even occurred to me. I'm not worried about anything. She wrinkles her nose. It's not the kind of thing... I'm not good at those kinds of events. Sure you are. In public, you're always on. Just like you were this morning with Pops. You've got a game face that you wear when necessary. Avery's cheeks hollow as she sucks them in, pursing her lips. I don't like being forced to wear it. There's something deeper. I'm about to ask her, when she shifts gears like it's her hand on the stick. The dance team. How are they texting me? Yeah, we mentioned you to Declan's ex, Eden. You're alone too much, I say. Not that Avery needs Eden and her squad for company on campus anymore, since I've taken up bodyguard duty. It's a nice gesture, but you didn't need to do that. I have friends. I just haven't had time to cultivate those relationships. My schedule this semester is crazy. Her voice is soft, but also a little defensive. Nothing wrong with working hard. I just figured it couldn't hurt to have some female upperclassmen take an interest. She licks her lips and nods, her expression softening. I appreciate it. So tonight, that's settled? She grimaces. I guess so. Yes. There are layers to her that I don't understand. Yet. I wonder if she realizes she's thrown down the gauntlet by claiming she'll only give up her virginity if she's emotionally invested. Rising to the occasion isn't just something my cock does. It's one of my defining characteristics.
Chapter 14. Avery. My world is officially spinning out of control. Shane will neither confirm nor deny that his grandfather is in charge of the Irish Mafia, which almost certainly means he is. This is a terrible development.